So, as we've already said, good, we're on. Hello, everybody. So, the series so far, we've been looking at the fruits of the Spirit. And so we've done, I think there's 9 in total, and I believe this is the last one. So far we've covered love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, and self-control. So I'm just going to assume that we've all been and heard those, and we're all good at all of those now, and we've just got the one left to do to complete the set. Otherwise we're going to have to go back and do them all again. So that's where we've got to, and tonight is gentleness, as we've already been talking about. So, there are a number of passages in the Bible that either speak of gentleness or being gentle or those kind of things. In Proverbs, it says, Proverbs 15, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. And another Proverbs, through patience a ruler can be persuaded, and a gentle tongue can break a bone. Jesus himself says, I am gentle and humble in heart. In Ephesians, he says, be completely humble and gentle. Philippians, let your gentleness be evident to all. Colossians, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. In 1 Timothy, he says, do not be violent, be gentle. And in 1 Peter, do this with gentleness and respect. So there's all sorts of, and there's others that I haven't mentioned there as well. But in all those occurrences, gentleness itself isn't the main event. It's often combined with humility or a whole list of virtues. Or in the 1 Peter section, it kind of says, do this with gentleness. So it's talking about something else. So gentleness itself isn't like the main event, which made it quite hard for me to decide what I was going to do this evening, because I couldn't think of anything straight away that I was going to talk about or a certain passage to go into. So I thought, so it's more of a, it's not necessarily a one-off action or a one-off behaviour. It's more like an attitude. So the idea being that the attitude can permeate through our lives in as many ways as possible. So if that's being gentle whilst we're at work tomorrow morning, perhaps, or being gentle whilst we're socialising with our friends, being gentle whilst preparing a sermon on gentleness in the printer breaks, being gentle whilst we're doing all sorts of things in every kind of area of our lives, interacting with our family, speaking to customers on the phone, all sorts of areas. It's the kind of thing that's just, hopefully will end up permeating through all sorts of different areas of our lives. So, and later on, we're going to have a look at hopefully how we can achieve this. So my first question I want to answer is God gentle? We've already kind of looked at this already this evening. But our God, the God we believe in, is the God who created the stars, created the heavens. He created man from dust. He caused a worldwide flood. He controls the weather. He delivered his people from Egypt via plagues and all those kind of things, ending in the parting of the Red Sea. I don't know if you ever sat down and thought about the parting of the Red Sea for more than 5 seconds, but have you ever imagined just walking on a beach literally towards the sea and then just seeing it kind of go like that? I've only ever seen it on films and cartoons, and I still can't quite understand it. It's just an amazing thing to consider. It's one of those things, stories we just know. but when you think about it, it's amazing. He can also just cause fire just to happen, just like that. He sends prophets to perform his miracles, including bringing people back from the dead. And Jeremiah in the Old Testament says that nothing is too hard for you. So this is the God we're talking about this evening. And my question is God gentle? So one of the passages that we're going to look at this evening is 1 Kings 19. And we'll get there in a moment, and I just want to set the scene quickly so we know where we're at. So at this stage in the Old Testament, we've got a king of Israel called Ahab, and Elijah is the prophet. And King Ahab married a foreign woman, which was forbidden, and the woman, I think, was called Jezebel. And so she worshipped foreign gods, and so because she had now married the king, and therefore Israel had also started to worship foreign gods other than our God, Jehovah. So Elijah's a bit fed up with this situation. So he brings up a bit of a face-off between Jehovah, our God, and this foreign god called Baal. So the face-off is they're going to build a massive bonfire. He'll get all the prophets of Baal to build their bonfire, and Elijah will build his. And one at a time, they will ask their God and pray for him to create fire on that bonfire out of nothing. So that's the face-off, and whoever wins, that will prove who the true God is. So the prophets of Baal went first. I should say there was 450 prophets of Baal and Baal against Elijah and Jehovah. So it's kind of a bit uneven match-off, but there you go. So these 450 prophets start off, and they start to pray to their god Baal and ask him to start this fire. Nothing happens to begin with, so they kind of go back, they pray some more, they beg, they plead, they kind of do all sorts of ritualistic things to try and get their god to pay some attention to them, but nothing happens. So Elijah is probably feeling pretty smug at this point. I'm sure he knew this would happen, and he was confident. He was so confident, in fact, that he asked the people there to get jars of water, multiple jars of water, and pour them on his bonfire, making it even more impossible to ignite, to start a fire. And then Elijah goes ahead and prays to God, "Let it be known that you are God in Israel." And guess what? The fire starts. Another picture of the miraculous power of our God at work. This is all still the intro, by the way. So then, rather uncomfortably, what happens next is Elijah tells the people to gather up all the prophets of Baal and to kill them, which they do. And then the king at the time, who's married to Jezebel, and Jezebel is a worshipper of Baal, isn't very happy about this, as you can imagine, because she worships Baal. Not only has Baal been made to look foolish and embarrassed because he didn't win the face-off, but also now 450 of his prophets have just been slaughtered. So it's an understatement to say that she's upset. And she sends a message to Elijah to say a revengeful message, basically. You're going to get yours. So he's a marked man from now on. So Elijah is understandably a little bit afraid. So he runs off and he prays to God to take his life. God doesn't answer that, but he just sends an angel instead and says, "Here's some food, have a meal." So that probably wasn't what he wanted, but says, "Have a meal and go and meet me in the mountains." And that's where we get to here. So we're going to be reading 1 Kings chapter 19, and it starts verse 9, the second half of verse 9, under the heading, "The Lord appears to Elijah." And the word of the Lord came to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He replied, "I have been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, broken down your altars, and put your prophets to death with the sword. I am the only one left, and now they are trying to kill me too." The Lord said, "Go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by." Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake came a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. When Elijah heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face and went out and stood at the mouth of the cave. Then a voice said to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" When I first heard that passage or came across it, I think it was actually from hearing a song about that. And I wanted to find out what the song was about, and it took me to this passage. I remember being amazed and not quite understanding, being a bit bewildered by the whole story. Hopefully I've got a bit of better understanding now. But it's an incredible, incredible little tale. So Elijah's at the end of his line, end of his tether, nowhere to go. And how does God respond? So firstly, he gives time to Elijah and asks him, "What are you doing here? What's up? Like Toby was saying earlier, we often ask people, how's it going? And this is kind of God saying to Elijah, how's it going? But with the difference of not being a Sunday morning, how's it going? But how's it going? Let's chat. You know, we've got time to listen and to talk about this. So he gives him time. Speaks in this gentle whisper. Not the earthquake, not the wind, not the fire, which you can do, and all that has happened. And I wonder if Elijah was probably terrified. He might have been excited, having previously prayed for God to take his life. All these things probably happening, he thought, great, this is it, I'm a goner. But not to be. He offers him guidance. He kind of tells him a few things to do next. In the coming upcoming passages, he kind of says, right, here's what you're going to do. You're going to go and appoint this king in Israel. You're going to appoint a new successor to be a prophet. And then these people that are trying to kill you, they'll be taken care of. And then you're going to do this, this, and this. He gives him some guidance, tells him what to do next, what to do, where to go. And he also gives him encouragement and reassurance that he's not the only one. Elijah, in his complaint, was saying, I am the only one left. But later on in the passage, God confirms that he has reserved 7,000 in Israel who haven't worshipped Baal. So he's not the only one left. So he gives him some reassurance that there is something to carry on fighting for. There is reason to live. There is reason to carry on. So he gives him reassurance. That's just incredible to think of the power that God has, and that sometimes he chooses to be gentle in that gentle whisper. It's just quite amazing. So, God is gentle, he is powerful, and he's also gentle. Okay, so that's God, and that's good. How about Jesus? So, in Paul's letter to the Corinthians, he starts off one of his sections of his letter in a peculiar kind of way, in 2 Corinthians 10. He starts off one of the phrases saying, by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, I appeal to you. And he goes on to appeal to them on various different things and the message he wants to get across. But that's the thing he starts with. And I didn't really know what that meant, so we're going to have a look at what the meekness and gentleness of Christ means. What is he trying to get across? And to understand this, unfortunately, I had to look up the Greek meaning of the word, and I've got no idea how to say this word. And it's probably going to come up on the screen in a sec. But I'm going to suggest that you say it by saying Api Eikeia. What is Ikea for short? I should have said that. So that's the word. And Michelle can testify to this. I was listening to this word online over and over again the other day, and I still can't get it. But that word is the word he uses for gentleness in that sentence. And before I go on to tell you what that means, if I was a betting man, if I'd have asked you all to define gentleness, A, I wouldn't have thought you'd have said that word, and B, I wouldn't have thought that you would have given me the description that this word means to describe gentleness. It certainly wasn't something that didn't come to mind, to me anyway. So, the word suggests a judge who yields strict judgment and instead shows mercy. Say that again. So the word itself suggests a judge who yields strict judgment and instead shows mercy. So showing gentleness, as far as Paul is concerned, is like a judge looking down on a guilty person who deserves a strict judgment, but instead chooses to show mercy, which is gentleness. It's also true power to have that authority, to have that power to look down on someone who has wronged you and be in that correct place and to see that they deserve a judgment and to be able to hand that judgment to them. But then to decide to choose to show mercy, that is gentleness. And now that whole thing starts to make sense. So the gentleness of Christ is essentially the gospel, which is pretty amazing. So we are all guilty here this evening. I am guilty. We are all guilty of falling short of God's standards, which are perfection. And so therefore, we cannot be with God because he is perfect, and he cannot be with anyone who is imperfect. So our severe punishment, our judgment, if you like, is to spend eternity without God because we failed to live up to his standards. But he chose to show mercy, which is amazing. However, someone still needs to pay that price. Someone still needed to be punished and take that punishment. And amazingly, God kind of calls up his son and says, "You're in. It's your time. You're going in as a sub. You're up. You're going to take that punishment," which is amazing. And that is true gentleness. So both God and Jesus both show gentleness from those two sections that we've had a look at. And we've already heard from some of the other scriptures that I briefly kind of read through earlier. We're encouraged to be gentle or do things in a gentle way. So I think from that we've got a good reason to try and be gentle or to try and aspire to be gentle. So now we need to try and figure out what that might look like in our lives. So one of the first things is we need to sense the mood. Sometimes we need to whisper. Speak with someone one-on-one, perhaps. Listen to what they've got to say. Actually make time. Time just kind of gets away with you, doesn't it? It does for me anyway. The week just disappears. And unless I actually proactively decide to do something, anything, I won't get it done. And I think that's the same for when we need to give people our time to spend speaking to them. We need to make time in our diaries to put aside to do that. So let's give that some priority. Make some time. Offer some support or advice if we can, or help if we're in a position to do so. If we're not in a position to help or give any kind of constructive feedback or support or advice, we can always give assurance or reassurance that we are not alone. And that kind of works on two levels. We're not alone as a body of believers. We have each other here. We have people in our house groups. We have people who we meet on a regular basis who we can talk to. They can support us, pray for us. We can pray for each other. We're not in this alone. We can give that reassurance to each other. But even more importantly, is that we have the Spirit within us to help us with these things, which is an incredible thing. That we're not alone. God has been through, Jesus went through everything on the cross that we have ever been through or could go through. And when he went back to be with the Father, he left us the Spirit. So we are not alone. He is with us, helping us every step of the way. That's the first thing. Sometimes we need to whisper. Second thing is to be humble. At least twice in Scripture, Jesus says, "I am humble and gentle." He kind of bundles them together. And Paul, in one of his letters, in Ephesians, I think, says the same. He kind of bundles humility and gentleness together. So what is being humble? It's effectively submitting to God and trusting that he knows what is best, which incredibly kind of ties in with exactly what Toby was talking about this morning. Your will be done. I'm thinking of Jesus in Gethsemane. When he said, "Is there any other way but your will, not mine?" He humbly submitted to the Father's will. The Father, the judge, decided we would be pardoned. And he subbed Jesus in, and Jesus humbly submitted to that will. So that is our example to follow of humility, to be willing to submit to God the Father, to his will, not our own, and to seek that. That's a second thing. Third thing is to offer mercy and forgiveness. Build bridges, even when it's not our fault, even if we haven't done anything wrong. Don't hold a grudge. And as part of offering that to other people, we need to accept that ourselves from Jesus and from the Father as well. We have been forgiven so much and accepted and received so much mercy. That then will spill out to other people if we truly accept that and understand what that is. And the fourth thing is to be thankful for his gentleness, for all of the above, which is kind of an obvious kind of point. I came across an account whilst I was doing some research for this talk, which had the quote, which I thought was interesting. It said, "Acting with gentleness is an act of rebellion." And I don't think I've ever thought of rebellion and gentleness being in the same sentence. I'm sure you probably weren't thinking I was going to try and get you to incite a rebellion this evening, coming to hear a sermon about gentleness. But it is kind of countercultural, actually, when we think about it. Showing mercy, considering someone else's needs before your own, offering forgiveness, saying you're sorry, admitting when we're wrong, building bridges, going the extra mile. It's certainly not going to help you win The Apprentice or The X Factor on those kind of shows. You need to be the best. You need to show that you're the best. And if that means putting other people down, then you need to do that. You need to kick them down to raise you up. And that's part of the world we live in. That's the message sometimes that we get. And to get ahead in your career, you need a CV that boasts of all your successes, all your achievements. And in the interview, you need to make sure you're the best of the interviewees. You need to make sure you are the top of the pile. We are like kind of pushed to strive, to live, to succeed, to gain it all, whatever the cost. Trust no one. Even your friends become the competition. Tell them what they want to hear if it's to your benefit. Words behind closed doors are insignificant. Push yourself. Never be satisfied. And even if you don't get it, at least you'll die knowing you tried. Sometimes we're too busy trying to succeed in life that we forget to live it. So showing gentleness, behaving in a gentle way, is very much countercultural and rebellious against the world, the kind of world system. So yeah, join the rebellion. So what can we do? So yes, can we actually achieve this? And the answer is, oh dear. Should have told you that half an hour ago, and you could have all gone home. So this isn't a good way to end the sermon. So, or the whole series so far, in fact, the whole list in Galatians 5, 23, 22, we can't achieve any of it. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, self-control, gentleness, it is all beyond us. If we could achieve those things, they would be called the fruits of humanity. But instead, they are the fruits of the Spirit. So this is like the final message, really. This is how we can achieve some of these things, because, like I've already said, we can't on our own. We need to invite the Spirit into every single aspect of our lives. Open up those areas that we kind of shut off. We kind of let him into the nice areas and the Sunday morning areas, Thursday evening areas. But the rest of the week, perhaps we kind of close off, either consciously or subconsciously on some level. And in fact, it is a proactive thing that we need to do. It might not be an active choice that we say you're not allowed into this place, but it is an action we need to take to actually invite him into every aspect of our lives. And that should be a daily invitation to allow him into the areas of our lives that aren't impacted at the moment. And that is a huge challenge to myself, and I'm sure to everyone here, to do that. He needs to access all areas, pass a free rein to kind of go wherever he pleases in our lives. No holds barred. So, once we allow the Spirit to kind of permeate through all of these areas of our lives, all those kind of dark corners that we don't want anyone to see, all those areas that we want to keep hidden. Once we invite him into all those areas, hopefully we'll start to see the fruits grow, the fruits of the Spirit. We'll start to see love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, self-control, and gentleness. So that's kind of the end. I was going to spend a few moments, if we can, just in quiet, focusing on our own lives, what areas we need to invite the Spirit into. What is it that we're hiding? It may not be, maybe we can't think of an area we're hiding, but it may just be that we need to just open up our lives to him on a Monday morning, saying, whatever happens today, please be part of it. Please be producing these fruit, allowing him to manifest those in our lives. So we'll spend a bit of time in quiet now, focusing on that, and then I'll pray, and then we'll sing our final song.